Marxism and the Assault on the Family is our topic for this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and our guest again is Dr. Paul Kanger. The recent decision by the U.S. Supreme Court on same-sex marriage is part of a long-term Marxist attack on the traditional family. So writes and so documents Dr. Paul Kanger, K-E-N-G-O-R, of Grove City College, in his new book, Takedown, From Communists to Progressives, How the Left Has Sabotaged Family and Marriage. Dr. Kanger, welcome back.
Well, thank you, Jerry. Good to be back.
Sure. Now, in previous radio segments, we've discussed an overview of your book, and we've also talked specifically about the recent Supreme Court decision. So let's talk about some of the things that were left out in previous discussions. And first question is this: why is marriage and the family such a big prize for the left?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. And I think it comes down to that the left really agrees with Christians, and that is that there's nothing more fundamental to Western Judeo-Christian society, to natural, traditional, biblical worldview than the family. And so if you really want to fundamentally transform the country, if you really want to transform human nature, which is what so many far-left ideologies seek to do, certainly communism being a form of totalitarianism sought to transform human nature, well, then you got to go after these absolute fundamentals. And, you know, there can be nothing more fundamental than one thing, God, religion. I would add two, private property, which is something that they've long gone after. And three, I mean, what could be more basic than the family and marriage? And so I think that's precisely what they're doing, why they're doing what they're doing.
The old statement says, as the family goes, so goes society.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's exactly right. And so if you can redirect the family, fundamentally transform the family, remake it in your own image, then maybe you can finally start to remake society in your own image as well. And I think that gets to the rub of what they're trying to do.
What is the ultimate goal then?
Well, for who, I guess, I don't know, but really the point in my book was that the typical same-sex marriage supporter has no idea what we're talking about.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, they're just, you know, they're looking at all this. These two guys on the radio right now are crazy. I just want marriage equality. I just want love to win, right? I just want spousal benefits for, you know, a gay man and his partner. I just want marriage equality. And I know, I understand that that's what they want. They have what they believe are completely friendly, benevolent motives. But what I'm telling them is that they don't realize, they really truly don't realize how what they want to do by redefining marriage fuels and fits a much older, much more sinister, much darker, much more grim anti-family, anti-marriage agenda by a radical left that from the time of Marx and Engels was talking about, to borrow a direct quotation from the Communist Manifesto, the abolition of the family.
Mm. So the abolition of the family is like one of the key goals to remaking society. It's amazing when you consider what Marx and Engels wrote in 1848 in the Communist Manifesto. Some of those things have already started to take place. I mean, the income tax and some of the planks that they spell out. This is what we want to have happen.
That's right. Yeah, in fact, there's a 10-point plan in the Communist Manifesto. It's exactly what it is. And people who haven't read it, most people haven't, especially the people who say, well, if you really just read the Communist Manifesto, you'll find out it's really got some pretty good ideas. I know right away when someone tells me that they haven't actually read it. But the 10 points talk about abolition of private property, abolition of all rights of inheritance, which you would see as basically a 100% inheritance tax. And at different times in American history, that thing's been at 55, 65, 70%.
Mm-hmm.
Introduction of a graduated or progressive income tax. That's point two or three. The final one, it calls for public education, free public education for all children in public schools. The 10th point of the Communist Manifesto's 10-point plan actually calls for that. So that's all in there. And if you look within those 10 too, and I go through this in the book, about four or five of them, maybe even six of them, all directly apply to the family. You know, certainly changing the right of inheritance, that gets in the way of one of, one of the things that sustains family over time is the right to bequeath, income and property to your descendants. Another, force all children into public schools. That certainly does away with home education, with religious education. And, there's several others. One of them, believe it or not, if anyone's ever seen the beginning of the movie The Killing Fields in Cambodia, this really typifies it. Marx and Engels talk in there about a gradual abolition or ratification of the distinction between town and country. They talk about literally scattering people from city areas to rural areas. They want a more equitable distribution of the population across the land. That's actually in one of the 10 points. Really easy to look up. And you know, that one too would obviously have a cataclysmic effect on the family. That's what you saw in the beginning of The Killing Fields. They're taking families out of their homes and they're redistributing them more equitably to the population. So this is the kind of very totalitarian stuff that these radical ideologies had in mind. Now, that's a far way removed from same-sex marriage, but it should bother same-sex marriage supporters that what they've done here to completely redefine and transform family very nicely fits with one of the goals among the many that these horrendous radicals that wanted to do these other things have been trying to do for a couple hundred years.
What's amazing, too, is that whenever Marxism is tried, and it has been tried in many different places, in many different contexts, it's always failed. I'm not aware of a single instance of success, and yet they keep resurfacing it or packaging it in some new way.
Right, and I think part of the explanation for that is spiritual. As a Christian, I can say that, and and also, too, one of the reasons why...
When you say that, do you mean like the enemy of our souls? As in,
I do, yeah, okay. The enemy of our souls. I think that that communism had a satanic influence. I don't think there's any question about that. Has there ever been any ideology that so firmly rejected God? They would just say they're atheistic, not satanic. I would beg to differ on that as a Christian. But what's fascinating is one of the groups of Marxists out there, and I give them a lot of ink in this book, were the cultural Marxists of the Frankfurt School. And they agreed. Around the 1920s, 1930s, they said, look, we're never going to be able to defeat capitalism and free markets economically. people just simply do too much of what's economically in their self-interest. They're never going to go for the Marxist worldview through economics. So what these cultural Marxists did was they looked to take down the West and, America, Western society, not through markets, not through economics, but through culture, sex, and education. Mm. And these people, they fused Freudianism and Marxism, a Freudian Marxism. Herbert Marcuse, Wilhelm Reich, they started talking about individuals being fundamentally bisexual or capable of sex with both sexes, sexual intercourse with both genders, of a sort of natural gender fluidity in people. Wilhelm Reich talked about children as young as the age of 4, including himself, wanting to have sex with adults. So for them, it was complete sexual anarchy. In fact, one of the criticisms that these cultural Marxists had of the Soviet Union, and one of the reasons is that the Soviet Union rejected Wilhelm Reich, was Reich said, look, you communists, you really want to do this right, your rampant divorce and abortion isn't good enough. You got to do homosexuality, too. And for the Russians, they said, well, that's a little too much for us. But what the cultural Marxists really needed were the 60s radicals in American higher education at places like Columbia. Mark Rudd, Bill Ayers, Bernardine Dorn, Kate Millett. And when those folks came along in the 1960s and walked through the doors of places like John Dewey's Columbia, that group was ready for these ideas. And then when they got those ideas, they're all now in higher education. So now is the time when they're finally really, really getting what they wanted culturally and sexually.
Wow. Well, where do we go from here as Christians?
Well, I say for Christians, it's very grim. And all you can really do now at this point is to fight to preserve and retain your religious freedom. And religious freedom doesn't just mean the right to walk into a church on a Sunday morning and pray, and then when you leave, you can't say anything else about religion. I mean, it's got to include as well the right of a Christian baker or florist or photographer to say, hey, I'm happy to serve gay people. I don't want to discriminate against anybody, but I'm drawing the line at a same-sex wedding because it violates my Christian beliefs. Yeah. You know, the forces of tolerance are not going to tolerate you doing that, especially now that they have gay marriage as a constitutional right.
Yeah.
So Christians now have to wage these battles to protect their First Amendment rights of freedom of religion that actually exist in the Constitution as compared to same-sex marriage, which does not exist in the Constitution, mm-hmm. but is now a constitutional right in the new America.
You know, I think if I remember what a fellow from the Catholic League said, Dr.
Bill Donahue.
Bill Donahue. Mm-hmm. He said, you know, fundamentally, people want to be fair. And he said, therefore, if you can expose the bigotry and the bias, and you just let people choose for themselves, decide for themselves, do you want to support that? In a very real sense, let's take a gay person, okay? Let's suppose you had a gay printer, and suppose that gay printer it was requested of that person, okay, I want you to make up a flyer for this rally that we're gonna have on how homosexuality is a sin, and how you can be freed from it if you want to. And then if the gay person said, I'm sorry, I don't feel good about printing that up. You know, that is exactly the kind of thing that's being forced on people, only they're using the force of law right. to do so, to try and violate the conscience. And, you know, this country is all about conscience rights.
Yeah, well, this is not going to work, Jerry. I know what you're saying is complete common sense, but to the left, the gay printer in that case ought to be allowed to refuse the project.
But it doesn't work the other way.
Yeah, no, that's
right. Tolerance is only a one-way street then, in the future.
It's a one-way street. Herbert Marcuse, who I quote in this book, he called it repressive tolerance. He said for the left, they should tolerate ideas from the left, but not tolerate ideas from the right.
Well, you're from Pennsylvania. You live in Pennsylvania. One of your newspapers said after the Supreme Court's decision, all right, we will no longer print anybody's opinions if they're in opposition to same-sex marriage. The debate's over. The Supreme Court has spoken.
Harrisburg Patriot News. Yeah, we've been sending them. They've been on our Center for Vision and Values email list for 20 years, 10 years. We've been sending them stuff for years. And, you know, now they've shown their usual liberal tolerance and open-mindedness and belief in diversity and dialogue and civic discourse by saying, if you disagree with us on gay marriage, to hell with you. We're going to make our opinion page not about opinion, but about our own point of view. So that's the kind of repressive tolerance that the left engages in. Now, what's really sad about this, and you know, Herbert Marcuse calling it not tolerating ideas from the right, you would think that our position in support of the form of marriage that has dominated all of histories from the beginning of mankind, male-female marriage.
In every kind of culture you can imagine.
Right. That has been the form of marriage that 99.9% of people who ever bestrode the earth support. You wouldn't think that that would be a right-wing position. But to these forces of tolerance, if you disagree with them, you're some sort of right-wing, fascistic, Hitler-esque type troglodyte, and this is what they do. There is no room for tolerance among the forces of tolerance.
Well, it was so interesting that in Samuel Alito's very reasoned dissent in the recent Supreme Court decision, he said something like, "You know, you could possibly whisper your opposition to same-sex marriage and your embracing of traditional marriage, perhaps in the privacy of your own home. But if you dare bring such an idea out now in the public arena or, you know, in the workplace or something like that, you could get in serious trouble."
Yes. Yeah, that's called tolerance in the world of liberalism.
That's amazing.
It's amazing, and it's absolutely true. And so, I'll tell you something else.
We have about half a minute to go.
Okay. Anthony Kennedy, who ruled as he did in the Supreme Court case, never forget this, Jerry, you know this. 1992, in KCV Planned Parenthood, Kennedy said, "At the heart of liberty is the right to define one's own concept of existence, of meaning, of the universe, and of the mystery of human life," unquote. Well, with that being the case, it should surprise us not at all that Anthony Kennedy and four liberals on the Supreme Court just came up with their own meaning and own definition of marriage.
But when they stand before Jesus Christ at the end of their lives, what then? All right, well, we'll leave on that thought. Thank you so much, Paul Kanger. Again, the book is Takedown. Excellent book. God bless
you,
sir.
Thank you, Jerry.
Thank
you
now.
Take care.
Bye-bye.